Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albracht and Tommy Kester.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. It is Jacob Albracht. It is Paul Savage in for Tommy Kester today. Jad Chambers producing for us. He's got the IHOP hotline brought to you by IHOP and all those new IHOP house faves. All your favorites, just $6 Monday through Friday. And we are looking forward to a big time show today because it was a wild and crazy Monday night. Near perfection if you are a fan of the Chiefs and or the Royals, because you get the Royals evening up the American League Division Series at one game apiece. You get the Chiefs. Let's be honest, you know, it was a 13-point win, but they dominated that game. We'll talk about Monday Night Football. We'll talk about the ALDS. We'll bounce around. We're bringing in our insiders to help us with it all today. We've got Mike Gillespie of Kings of Kaufman. He'll join us bottom of this hour to help with the ALDS, and then Chiefs Radio Network executive producer Dan Israel, our Chiefs insider, will join us at 10 o'clock to also help go through Monday Night Football. What a night. We'll give away some HTO today. We'll get you apprised of the schedule. We've got all kinds of good stuff coming for you. Paul, it's a day to party on a Tuesday here on Sports Daily.
Oh, it was a huge day yesterday. By the way, I'm going to add one little thing. I had a lot of fun yesterday, too, before I got into sports last night. I went to Cheney for the first time. I had been to Cheney as far as the golf course. Remember when Bruce Hurdle had his golf tournament for Sports Daily out at, I think it's Oak. Is it Oak Hill? Something like that. There in
no
Cheney.
Idea.
Yeah, anyway, golf course there. And that's as far into Cheney as I've never been in Cheney. Can you believe that? Lived here all my life. I've never been in Cheney. That's a nice town. I went over and helped coach a Wichita East JV game. And let me tell you, I know we've got a lot of listeners out there because we hear from them all the time, and we've got a lot of listeners in the Cheney area. But that's a nice little city, Jacob. That's a nice little city. And I saw some advertisers that are on our station or have been on our station, and it was really kind of cool. So anyway, I started my evening out coaching some JV football. I haven't done that in years. And I had so much fun with those kids. I got a pair of defensive ends that are about 6'2", freshmen, that are real skinny, who by the time they're seniors could be 6'4", you know, 250, and being recruited by everybody in America. But that's beside the point. But anyway, so I got home last night, and of course, flip on the TV, and I'm torn between all the things going on. My goodness gracious. Let me go to the Royals first with my overall thoughts. And as I watched that game, I thought back to the first game that the Royals should not have lost. We had a bogus call. I think it was in the seventh inning. We have a base that's stolen. We have a call. We have a call safe. Go to the review. Jacob, I don't know. Maybe I'm not seeing things really well. Maybe I'm
yeah,
not.
Yeah, it was hard. It was a tough review. If they had called him out and reviewed it, I think they'd have kept him out. It was just, you know, it was tight.
No, it wasn't.
Royals fans.
There was an inch gap.
Look, I
think gap.
It was not an inch. Yep. I think he was out too. And the problem was you couldn't time up from that angle. You couldn't see when the tag hit the foot, and from the other angle, you couldn't see the gap in the base. I think that was the problem. Is you had those two simultaneous things and no way to see them. It doesn't matter, Paul. They won game two.
Well, you know, but like, it should be 2-0. My point is that I'm watching that game.
It should be 2-0. It would have been a tie game. Who's to say they would have come back to win that game? I mean, look, it was a tough call. But this was the point yesterday. It was a tough call. Royals probably feel like they should have won that game. You took their best to the ropes. And that's why I thought yesterday, Paul, the Royals were in great shape. They got to Gerrit Cole. And Gerrit Cole wasn't going to beat them three times in that series anyway. The Royals were in great shape. It set up. They have their two aces. Now they get to come back home. They didn't worry about it. You know, like it was a tough call. Yeah, but it would have been a tie game. They still had to score a run they didn't get anyway. So what? They lost the first game. And that was the point for me yesterday with the Royals. Mm-hmm. Is who cares? Go back and win the second game. You want to split on the road. That's exactly what they did. Now they come home. They'll get Lugo on the mound here. And then they'll get Reagan's again at some point in the series. But the big thing is they're finally waking up a little bit offensively, Paul. And they're waking up, and we still are not seeing a collective offensive effort from the middle of their lineup. Bobby Witt Jr., who had the clutch hits in the Baltimore series, has not been good in this one. He had an error last night. And they're still tied up at 1-1. Salvador Perez finally unlocked a little bit. If Salvador Perez gets hot, he is the player in the offense that can carry the load. If he gets hot,
oh my goodness,
this is what he does. Yeah. And Vinny Pasquantino looks not quite like the Vinny Pasquantino before injury, but it's still lingering there. I think the Royals are in great shape. I thought they were in fine shape going into game two. And I think they showed that with their effort and their energy last night. Mm-hmm. We'll get to the Royals. Mike Gillespie is going to join us here. The other quick one, and we'll do quick hitters here because we've got insiders to help go through all these. Chiefs Saints, Paul. Look, the Chiefs were dominant in that game. It should have been. I mean, they left at least 9 points on the board with red zone inefficiency, at least, and maybe 12 if you think about the missed field goal. Then you had the non-caught pass in the end zone that turned into an interception. I don't even remember what the other one was. But a lot of points left on the board, but it never felt like the Saints had a chance in that game. You got the same old dominant performance from the defense, and you got an offensive game. And look, I made a lot of money, Paul, on the Chiefs last night because I had an idea of what they might do. They did it. They executed it so well. The only thing that surprised people was the reemergence of Juju Smith-Schuster, honestly, within the game. It's like you could see it happening as it was happening, but the game plan was clear. They're going to run the ball to Kareem Hunt, and they're going to use their tight ends, and that's exactly what they did. Mm-hmm. They threw it all over the place to their tight ends. And then if you're New Orleans and you think, okay, we got to readjust to what Kansas City's doing, mean old Andy Reid comes out in the second half and starts throwing to the receivers. Like, just imagine, that was... Paul, to me, that looked like, and to my untrained eye, as far as watching coaches work, that was as impressive an individual game plan slash play calling I think I've ever seen from Andy Reid last night. He New Orleans did not stand a chance last night defensively against what the Chiefs were doing. And they made the changes within the game, Paul. Like, it was all tight ends in the first half. And then in the second half, they totally flipped it upside down. They're throwing it to Juju. They're throwing it to Worthy. They're throwing it to Hardman. Like, they're using those same tight ends, but they're all blocking. Like, that was a masterclass in coaching. Andy Reid was on fire last night.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of time to throw the football. I mean, there were plays that there was nobody within 3 yards of Mahomes sitting in the pocket. And it felt like I could have got my timer out, you know, my egg timer, and started timing how much time does he have in the pocket, because he had great protection. I mean, literally seconds and seconds and seconds of time in the pocket. So you got to give a lot of credit to the offensive line for the ability to do that.
And yeah, I mean, Mahomes ran around, though, a little bit, Paul. He was doing some jump passes.
That's part of it.
As great as Andy Reid was last night, and again, I think individual game, it was as good as I've ever seen from any coach, play call or whatever. Mahomes looked like the old Mahomes. He also looked, he short threw a couple of passes, but he also looked better than he has this year too, don't you think?
Right, I do. And by the way, you say Mahomes move around in the pocket. That's kind of what he does. I mean, his ability, I mean, he is as comfortable moving in the pocket. In fact, he might be more comfortable moving a little bit this way, that way, and finding that spot and finding that open receiver as if he was just your typical, you know, quarterback, who's your Johnny Unitas type, if I could bring up a name from the past, a guy who's going to sit in the pocket no matter what. Not going to move to the right, not move to the left. That's Johnny Unitas. That's not the way that Patrick Mahomes is. He's comfortable in what he does. I was just impressed with everything that he did last night, particularly with regards to buying time and that kind of thing. And I guess I could say he created. I mean, duh, come on. I mean, show me a game that he doesn't create something in the course of a game, and he is a great creator. Boy, I'll tell you what, it was fun to watch. And I was torn because I didn't see everything in the Chiefs, and I didn't see everything in the Royals, you know, flipping back and forth kind of.
No, I had my two screens set up, Paul.
That is
fantastic. We'll get into all of it. We got to break because we're going to get Mike Gillespie in bottom of the hour. So we're going to get another segment in here before that. Breaking news, Paul.
Yes.
Now, you're hard knocks. You're going to love this drama.
Love
now,
hard knocks.
Chew on this because it's probably going to be the second hour before we can get to this.
Okay.
The New York Jets have fired Robert Saleh.
Not surprised.
And we'll get into it. Just chew on that because this just happened. This just came down. It's probably going to get kicked to the second hour for us, but that is out there. That just happened. This portion of the program brought to you by Crestview Country Club. It is a great time to golf if you can get out there. The weather is perfect. You can get out for the crisp mornings or the nice warm afternoons. They've got 36 holes to choose from.
Let's go.
They've also got a great restaurant. They've also got a great bar. We want to send you over there and check out the facilities. Give them a call. Tell them we sent you from Sports Daily. We appreciate their support. If you're looking for a place to hang, our family loves it. It is a great place. So give them a call. Yep. We're going to come back. We'll continue this party on a Tuesday from a big Monday night. Mike Gillespie, Kings of Kauffman, will join us to talk Royals bottom of the hour. Dan Israel, Chiefs insider, joining us at 10 o'clock. A lot to get in here. Your calls, your comments, always welcome. 869-1240 on the IHOP hotline. You can leave your comments on our video streams. We'll be right back.
.975 and 1240 KFH.
Let's set it up. Our text to win contest. You can enter by texting the keyword T right now to win some HTO. TTEA to the short code 20357. What that'll get you is an opportunity to win a free iced tea. More than 20 flavors to choose from, including the all new peach cobbler. Also a free iced or hot coffee featuring the all new fall flavors of our coffee selections. Butter pecan mocha or dirty chai apple crisp. You can get one of each right now. Again, text the keyword TTEA to the short code 20357. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Good luck, everybody. We welcome everyone back into Sports Daily. Leave us your video comments on YouTube, on X, on Facebook. Watching us on 12 News Connected. You can also, of course, call the IHOP hotline at 869-1240. And you can watch us on 12 News Connected Plus. We like that. You can leave us voice messages on the Odyssey app, Paul, which has been a fun way for people to get in touch with the program. If you're listening to us on the Odyssey app, you just push that little microphone and it pops right in there. You can leave your voice message, send it through, and move on with your day. Austin says on YouTube, that was one of the best performances by Juju I've seen. Really happy for the guy, honestly. I think everybody's happy for Juju. Look, Juju is a lighter. Juju is like Rashee Rice light, right? Juju was Rashee Rice's role 2 years ago when that Chiefs offense was humming. And he's gone. Got his big contract, he's back, but we all just sort of assume he's older and kind of lost a step. Boy, he looked good last night, Paul, and a lot of that, he was running wide, free, and open, but he's been a really good blocker for this team this year. Now he's kind of showing, again, I just go back to and we'll talk to Dan Israel at the top of the hour, but if the Chiefs can run dudes that wide open, I mean, good luck, Paul, because they did. It's almost like they had two different game plans in that game. Tight ends in the first half, wide receivers in the second half, and the Saints never could readjust to it. But, Paul, with all that being said, don't you think this comes down to Kareem Hunt and that run game's ability to just – 32 carries by the running backs last night for the Chiefs. 32 carries. That's the ticket with the defense playing the way it is. It opens everything up, Paul, and Kareem Hunt has been this reunion this year. We've got all these old Chiefs back on the team and they're all playing big roles.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know something, you made a great point, your ability to run the football, but isn't that the point for every team in the NFL?
The way the league's changing, running the ball it's this too high safety thing. Running the ball is the ticket right now in the NFL.
Yeah, you got high safeties, you're going to run the football. If they drop down, you're going to throw the football. That's kind of the way things are nowadays.
Pretty simple, right?
But it's not complicated, is it? I mean, people think you look at the defensive backfield
so
and it
easy.
Looks so complicated, but it's not that complicated. But the point is that, yeah, they look good running the football, and when they do run the football, it changes everything. Any football team in the NFL or college or high school or JV games from last night, anybody who can run the football, the pass game gets wide open. And, of course, I think it was just in the last couple of weeks, I'm watching some show, having some fun, watching some guys visit about the NFL, and they start showing these clips on the safeties, and I can't remember which team it was, an NFL team. You know, here's the safeties. They're deep. We're going to run the football. Oh, look, the safeties are checked up. We're going to throw the football, and we're going to throw some things over the middle, and we'll throw a little deeper. And, you know, it was really kind of interesting to watch. And, of course, that's just the nature. But you got to run the football. You know, everything starts with football. You know, there was a point in the history of football in the evolution. Jacob, you know, it went years and years and years and years, and there was no such thing as a throw. Then somebody decided to throw the football. Voila! Now we have football as to what it is today. And you've got to run the football no matter who you are. I mean, you've got to be able to run the football. If you want to have a great football team, you've got to be somewhat balanced. And, of course, we all know the importance of quarterbacks. And, I mean, even at the college level, for guys' sakes, look at the importance of the quarterbacks. All the guys that are transferring here and there and all the guys that we have major upsets all over the place last weekend. And quarterbacks were the difference in almost every one of those games. But also the ability to run the football was important with the ability for Vanderbilt. Look at Vanderbilt, for instance, run the football. So Jacob, you make a great point. Everybody's got to be able to run the football, and, not everybody can, but if you can't, the odds are stacked against you of being successful, getting to the playoffs or even making a run into the playoffs. No matter how good you are, you got to be able to do that. So yeah, you've got a great point there. There's no question.
It doesn't surprise us with the Chiefs. It's what their foundation was last year to win a Super Bowl. We didn't, or I didn't, expect that same identity this year, but injuries have forced it, right? You're missing your top two receivers. But even without Isaiah Pacheco, Kareem Hunt has been that guy. I applaud the Chiefs for continuing to mix Carson Steele in. I thought it was interesting to see him used as a fullback several times as well. Mm-hmm. But that opens everything up. And again, not everybody can do this because not everybody has Mahomes and Kelce and Andy Reid. But what they're doing now is pretty wild when you think about it. I don't think the Saints are nearly as good as some people thought they were, offensively or defensively. But that's not a bad team. And the Chiefs flat dominated them last night. Mm-hmm. They had one gaffe defensively on the long touchdown to Shaheed. That's it. This defense is really, really, really good. And the offense will find a way, whatever it is. Because now you think of these injuries, Paul, and you just think of how many different ways the Chiefs can attack. If Juju's able to do that, and look, Juju was running free last night, but the Chiefs appear to have the ability to get him free like that. I think when you look at that game and you think about other teams that'll play the Chiefs, the answer, Paul, to me, I think, is pressure on Mahomes, right? That's how you counteract all of this, is to get the pressure on the quarterback.
Right. And we also know, I mean, you know, when it comes to New Orleans, we understand that this is this is not the same team that I thought it was, what, two, three games into the season?
No, they're just not that good.
They're not that good. That's a good way of putting it. They're not that good. I thought they were going to be better last night. I mean, I hate to say this. I took them in our Friday football picks. I shouldn't have done it. But I know. I'm the only one.
I haven't thought about our picks. I think I had a good week. I'll have Jad check that. Honestly, I'm not even being facetious. I think I had a good
you did.
Week.
You did very well. I've already looked, and you did very well. I sucked. I was 2-4, I believe, is what I was when you see the totals. But with that being said, you know, I misjudged how good the Saints were. I just did. I thought they were better. I was going off of what I saw earlier in the season. And they weren't that good. But anyway, with that being said, you know, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a lot of fun. Do the Chiefs continue to push to run the football? I think they do. By the way, Derrick Henry, what do you think? Does that make a difference on a football team? Does Derrick Henry make a difference on the Ravens?
It's been the counter to the too high safety thing. It's the NFL's gone back in time about 10, 15 years, and it shouldn't. This is what the NFL does all the time.
It does.
They do that. In 5 years, it'll be a spread it out, throw it deep league again.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
This is what the league. It's just the Chiefs have been ahead of it for the last 2 years. They've been out ahead of it. All right, we'll come back. We're going to shift to some Royals talk the rest of the way in this hour. So Royals fans, get ready. Mike Gillespie, Kings of Kauffman, joins us as the Royals even up the series here to come back home. That's where we head next. Appreciate Prairie Fire Coffee for always keeping us fueled up here at the KFH Studios with some delicious coffee. Need that caffeine? Don't need it today. Everybody's wide awake and lively this morning because of the night we had last night. We're coming back. More Sports Daily. Mike Gillespie joins us next.
...97.5 and 1240 KFH.
Hey, the Royals are in the Major League Baseball playoffs, and they're available for free right here on KFH and the Odyssey app. Tune in for coverage as the Royals come back home to Kansas City. That'll be tomorrow. You can always listen as well on the Odyssey app. Search for KFH at game time. Man, oh man, the Royals even the series in New York. We bring in Mike Gillespie, Kings of Kauffman, our Royals insider. Mike, yesterday, I kind of started yesterday and just said, it doesn't feel to me like the Royals are in any sort of desperation. Felt like they probably should have won the first game. The way they're playing lends itself to success in this series. And even in a game where Cole Reagans didn't have his best stuff, it was enough. They felt like they were in control of that game. I don't know what this bullpen revelation is, but to me, it just screams that the Royals are going to be a really, really difficult team to beat in the postseason.
Oh, I agree, especially now. I keep trying to figure out what's gotten into that bullpen. And, you know, the obvious is they're much better. I'd kind of like to know what happened to make that change, but I'm happy if they keep doing what they're doing.
It's been wild. I mean, you've seen it now in a few games. Let's look at this series as a whole, because the other part of this that makes me pretty confident is we look, and Salvi had his home run last night. Hopefully that awakens him a little bit. But your RBI last night scored another four runs. Garcia, Pham, Hampson, the offense has been productive without its most productive players being very productive. And that's another thing. Like, at some point, if they get, you know, Vinny and Bobby and Salvi to wake up at the same time, again, this is what it all sort of built to, right? Like, we liked the Royals as a playoff team, and this is a reason why. The good news is the bullpen's better than we thought, and the rest of the lineup's been better than we thought.
Yeah, this is a decent lineup right now, especially because, you know, you mentioned Hampson, an unlikely candidate to step up and into the breach when guys like Witt and Pasquantino, you know, really aren't doing anything. They're a combined 0 for 19 in the first two games. And what happens? Hampson gets a really key RBI that gives him a two-run lead yesterday. Michael Garcia has four hits. Perez leads off an inning with a homer. You're exactly right. These are things that really good teams do.
You know, one of the things that we were talking about earlier in this conversation that Jake and I were having before you were on with us is the game one situation with the botched call on the steal to second base. I believe it was in the seventh inning. I think that was right. I think it was the seventh inning. And how I thought that replays showed convincingly that the call was blown, that there should have been an out. That single that happened a batter later and scored the steal, it shouldn't have ever happened. And the Royals would win that game. Royals should be up 2-0. Your thoughts on that? And I was certainly glad to see the fact that that did not affect the Royals. They played. Their head was in the game. Everything looked really good. And your comments, though, on that call and what it could have, what it should have, or maybe what no reaction to, you know, a blown call like that.
Well, you know, the first couple of angles, it looked close. And then the next couple of angles, it was just really clear that he was safe. I mean, there was no question about it. I think it had something to do with changing the outcome of the game. But when it gets right down to it, you know, I look at it and I say, yeah, but the Royals also walked eight batters. They had some chances that they didn't capitalize on. But coming away from it, you know, they shook it off. And proof of that is in last night. And again, I harp about what good, maybe not great, but what good teams do is they bounce back from that kind of thing. They brush it off and move on. And that's what the Royals did.
That doesn't really surprise me. Does it surprise you? I mean, that's kind of been their thing. We've seen this team survive some long losing streaks late in a year. And I think it's probably the Bobby Witt Jr. effect and to some degree Salvador Perez. But I think it's pretty clear to see the DNA of this team. And again, it's why going into game two didn't feel like there was a sense of urgency. All the pressure in the world right now is on the Yankees. Aaron Judge is struggling. You got to go back to their place. It's a series now. Garrett Cole can't win you two more games. Like, to me, all the pressure is on the Yankees, and that's advantage Royals if they're feeling that way.
Yeah, very much so. You know, the Yankees have this odd pressure of playing in the Bronx, and everybody expects them to win a world championship every year. The fans want Aaron Boone fired every season before the season even begins. And they don't have, you know, the best recent playoff record. So now, you know, they come into Kansas City tied, and they're going to be in front of a crowd, a really hungry crowd, and a really hungry team that is the most resilient Royals team, you know, I've seen since 2014. We'll see, I think, tomorrow night. Just what effect this may be having on the Yankees. You know, if the Royals come out and get a lead and step on the proverbial throat early, this thing could be over.
You know what I wish? If you could grant a wish, here would be my wish when it comes to Major League Baseball. I wish that this was for the American League Conference Championship with the New York Yankees, and there were seven games instead of five.
American League pennant in baseball, Paul. It's
pennant. Well, the pennant. Okay. You know what I mean. I want this to be a seven-game series. I'm not going to be happy with a five-game series. I want a seven-game series. Am I wrong on that?
No. I think once you get past the wild card, they really ought to all be seven. Sure, that stretches things out, and you get into the uncertainty of late October, early November weather. But, you know, three out of five, after the first game, it's pretty tough to come back if you lose. And in an ideal world, you know, it would be the Yankees-Royals. I think the Yankees-Royals is more interesting than if it's, you know, the Royals take this series and then play Detroit or Cleveland, even though they're both good clubs. There's just an aura about Royals-Yankees that, you know, a lot of fans haven't experienced that. But you know, I'm certainly old enough to remember the good old days of the 70s. And early 80s. So, yeah, I'd love to see something like that rekindled.
But it's not going to be this year. So now we look ahead to a five game. It's become a best of three series now. Reagans and Garrett Cole were not the aces that, you know, the teams, their respective teams probably thought they'd be. Each of the teams did win their games that they started. We know it'll be Lugo in the first one against Clark Schmidt, who's been good. We don't know games 4 and 5. How do you think Quatrero plays this out? We saw Lorenzen used in game one. Who is it starting after Lugo the rest of the way, do you think, Mike?
Well, I think they're gonna try as best they can to follow the normal rotation. I'm absolutely certain we're not going to see Brady Singer. You know, he's out in the bullpen, and I'm not convinced we're going to see Brady Singer in this series at all.
Yeah.
But, you know, you got to stick with what's working. And right now, you know, you'll see Waka, I think, on Thursday. You know, these days off kind of work out really beneficial for the Royals. Yes. The timing is really good. So I don't see any surprises. Now, if it gets pushed to a game five, who knows? You know, that's all hands on deck, and everybody's going to pitch that Cotrero needs to pitch.
So probably stay the same for both teams, too, because it works for both teams. So it goes Cole, Rodon, most likely. So you see rematches there.
Yeah,
and I ask that because knowing that, I feel like the Yankees have the pressure. But if you know Gerrit Cole is likely coming on Thursday, should there be any pressure on the Royals to win the Lugo start?
Yeah, I think the pressure comes no matter who the Yankees are going to will start in. You know, games four and five, if they get there, it's just, you know, this is the time of the season where I don't think the pressure is even more is more or greater from game to game until you get to the elimination games.
You know, I've just got to ask you about the Dodgers and the Padres. I don't know that it's been a while since I've seen two teams that hate each other as much as these two teams do. There's a lot of hate here. How much do you love hate in baseball?
You know, that's a good question. I absolutely loved it. you know, in the old Yankees Royals days, I mean, that's just, you know, that used to excite us all. You don't see it much anymore.
That's right.
But I'll tell you something that kind of struck me about the Padres and Dodgers the other night. Maybe we didn't see it. I don't know. You know, they were focusing on Profar and Tatis and you know, what those guys were doing. But normally in those situations, you might see the opposing team, in this case, the Dodgers manager, pop out of the dugout and you know, kind of say, hey, fans, you know, cool it. I never saw Roberts come out of the dugout.
That's right.
I think Roberts was fine. He didn't like the stuff being thrown on the field, but I think he liked or appreciated the fact that maybe this is going to fire the Dodgers up. And, you know, you look at what Manny Machado did in the dugout.
That's right.
When was the last time you saw
that's right
a player call a dugout meeting? I mean, when he did that, I thought, oh man, this is going to get bad for the Dodgers.
It's incredible. What a great rivalry. Yeah. I love it. All these series have been really compelling as they all get, I believe, 1-1 now and shortened down. I want to go back to game two for a minute. Mike Gillespie joining us, Kings of Kauffman. You can follow him on X at Mike Gillespie JD. Bubic went two innings last night, which makes sense to me. I thought it would be the plan. He, with a day of rest, should be able to come right back, correct? Do you think he's fine to go here on Wednesday, even though he pitched two innings yesterday?
Definitely. You know, he has shown an ability to come back. You know, they went through that series of games late in the season where Cotrero was pitching people back to back, three or four of them. And I kind of thought that what he was doing was gauging how ready they were to do that come the playoffs. But yeah, I'm more than comfortable with seeing Bubic Wednesday night.
And maybe they need him, right? Because quick trigger seems to be the theme. If Lugo is in any danger Wednesday, I think we see another quick trigger. That's, and I don't blame, you know, there was a time not that long ago where we would have said, Cotrero, you're insane if you hand this over to the bullpen this early in the game. But I fully support it and endorse it now, the way they've been going. If Lugo looks like he doesn't have his best stuff, it may be just like last night or even quicker than last night with Reagans.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. Maybe not terribly quickly Wednesday night, but definitely after that. And I don't really think anybody's going to have a real long leash Wednesday night. It's too much at stake.
Man, it's been awesome. What a series. What a postseason. What a season. and it feels good for the Royals. Bobby Witt Jr. is going to wake up at some point in this series. Let's just hope he does it before Aaron Judge wakes up. Because you've got these two, you know, the two front runners at MVP who have been non-factors to a large degree in this series, which is wild to think about. But that's postseason baseball. Mike, what do you guys have going at Kings of Coffin for everybody on this day off of the series?
Pretty much the usual that we do, keep everybody posted, write what we think that they want to read. And, you know, we've picked it up a little bit here in the playoffs. You know, we're right now, if you come to Kings of Coffin, we hope you do, you're going to see a lot of stories about the postseason. We're kicking it.
It's going to be great. You can follow Mike's work there on social media. Check out Kings of Coffman. We'll be back next week, and hopefully it's right as we're getting into an American League Championship Series. Got to take care of those pesky Yankees first. High drama for the Royals. We love it, Mike. Appreciate the visit.
Yep. Thank you, guys.
That's our Royals insider, Mike Lespe. Paul and I have a few more minutes here with you. So, Paul, we give people a second to react to that. We'll have more on the Royals certainly tomorrow and the rest of the show today as we take a break. And we've got Dan Israel coming up, top of the hour. We've got just a handful of minutes here, so let's cram this in because it's sort of the news of the morning. The Jets fire Robert Saleh. And there was a point this offseason where I said, that's it, I'm out on the Jets. It's just not going to work. I don't think I'm surprised Saleh has been fired. It clearly was a disconnect with Aaron Rodgers. Now, let me say it this way. It doesn't surprise me that Saleh is fired. I would place the blame more on Rodgers than Saleh, but you can fire Aaron Rodgers, right? If it's not working, you have to do something to fix it. And clearly it's not working. I hate mid-season firings, but the Jets probably made the right call here, don't you think?
I don't know, and here's why I don't know, is that last year, as I watched, you know, Hard Knocks, it was obvious that everything was being built around Aaron Rodgers. That whole team geared around Aaron Rodgers as quarterback, Aaron Rodgers as team leader, Aaron Rodgers as emotional leader, you name it, he was going to be the inspiration and the team leader of that football team. You lose him four plays into the first game, he's gone. Things all of a sudden change. That's a tough thing to overcome. Now you got to find not only a quarterback, but you got to find the inspiration, the leader, the team leader, the guy that's going to bring this team together. Hard to do, very hard to do, and it wasn't done, not to the satisfaction of the ownership and, obviously, you know, Jet Nation. It was not done. So with that being said, I'm a little more sympathetic with this particular head coach, because there's something between him and Rodgers. And I'm not sure I'm quick to blame the head coach in this situation.
It's not that I'm blaming the head coach.
Okay.
That's not what I'm doing.
Okay.
But you can't fire Aaron Rodgers.
Can't fire Aaron Rodgers.
So if it's not working, mm-hmm. and you've put literally everything on the line for this season, what else are you going to do?
Well, I guess that's a drastic step. It's a drastic step. But it's obvious, and all the little things that have been captured on video have showed, you know, Aaron Rodgers doesn't seem to want to be a part of his world, of coach's world. He's not sure that this is his guy. I mean, remember a couple weeks ago when Saleh tried to hug him and he backed off and said, no, we're not doing that. And I thought to myself, you know something, that wasn't a miscommunication or something like that. That was disdain between the two. And I think it's obvious now that this has happened, that yes, there is a disdain between the two. Can't have that. Jacob, you can't have that. Can't have that on a professional football team.
No, well, look, Aaron Rodgers is done. He's done after this year. Nobody's going to welcome that in now, but this year still exists,
right.
And they have enough talent with him there to maybe get it figured out. Mm-hmm. So I mean, the Jets have put all their chips in the middle of the table. they won't have a better option than Rodgers. It's almost like you watch them and the Browns, two expected contenders. The Browns not really willing to do anything. They need to be benching
Deshaun Watson. That's even a worse disaster.
But the Jets, like, they've got all their chips on the table just like that. And they're like, we're not getting better than Aaron Rodgers, so what are we going to do? Like, what can we do?
Yeah, what do you do with Watson? Doesn't he have like 90 – Is it 90, 100 million guaranteed?
Leave it, light that money on fire.
Light
it
on fire.
You got to still give your team a chance to win. And I applaud the Jets, even if it's the wrong move, I applaud them for making a move to try and fix it. All right. If you want to chime in on that, best way to do it probably is to leave us a voice message through the Odyssey app, because it's going to be a while before, if we get back to it. When we return, we'll be talking some Chiefs. Dan Israel, our Chiefs insider, joins the program. It's a party on a Tuesday. Speaking of parties, Wichita Thunder hockey opening night is October 18th. The Thunder will take on the Kansas City Mavericks at 7:05. You can get an opening night four-pack, four tickets, and $10 merch voucher. Starts at just $80. You can visit WichitaThunder.com to check that out. More Chiefs talk. Our Chiefs insider, Dan Israel, joining us. It's Albrock and Savage at Sports Daily on a Tuesday.
In Odyssey Sports Station, this is 97.5 and 1240 KFH, KNSS HD2 Clearwater, Wichita's most listened to sports radio. Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Kester.
Caught! Touchdown! Kansas City!
Hey, Chiefs Kingdom, we have you covered. Joining Sports Daily Live, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, Dan Israel.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is a celebration on this Tuesday, a Royals win, a Chiefs win. We bring in Dan Israel, the Chiefs Radio Network. You heard the call last night on KNSS. Mitch Holthus, Dan, the crew in there with a big victory for the Chiefs. Dan, on a Tuesday, the thing that stands out to me more than anything else, I don't recall an individual play calling, game plan effort better than what Andy Reid put out there last night. I don't know that he's ever done a better job calling a game, preparing for a game. They had the Saints on the road. The Saints could not figure out what they were doing, and it was wild to watch it all live.
It's funny you mentioned that, Jacob, because last night when I did my interview with Andy, one of the things I mentioned was the coaching mechanics. We saw over the weekend what poor coaching mechanics looks like. The Buffalo Bills game, the Bengals game, there were some coaching decisions, some clock management that was ponderous. And I felt like not only did the play calling really excel last night, you saw them make the review decisions. You saw them calling timeouts at the right time. I just felt like the coaching mechanics that the entire coaching staff did, both offensive and defensive and special teams, was really stellar last night, and it turned into a convincing win.
They were dominant in the game. The red zone issues were a problem. It should have been even more. But I just thought, coming in, I had a good read on it. I said they're really going to use the tight ends, and they're going to feature Kareem Hunt a lot. And they did. It was really that part to me was fairly predictable. If I can guess it, it's fairly predictable, right? Because I'm not a coach. Then in the second half, they turned it upside down. All those tight ends out there started blocking and they opened it up for the receivers, and they started to feature Juju and they started to feature Worthy. Like, it was like they had two different game plans within the game. And I just don't remember ever seeing that before. It was crazy.
Yeah, we knew we were in for a ride with the tight ends, right? When we saw four tight ends active, it's like, here comes Andy Reid with some creativity. And then you're absolutely right. I thought Juju Smith-Schuster yesterday had the kind of game that you expected a guy with his record and his past to have. He not only, I know he was upset over the interception. especially in the end zone. You know, that's the worst kind of interception you can have. But man, did he come flying back. Two huge catches, you know, late in the game, and really moved the Chiefs down the field at a time when they needed to. Answering that interception, Jacob, to me, was really important. You know, when you that's what good teams do, right? When they get faced with adversity, they figure out a way not only to move through it, but to answer it. And I thought they did a great job of that.
You know, Dan, one of the things that really impresses me is five straight wins to start the season. Team 5-0. You're the world champions, and you're 5-0. You're taking everybody's best shot. I'll be real truthful. I'm really shocked at 5-0. This is the NFL, by the way. I mean, anybody can beat anybody. And to be 5-0 at this point says something special about this team, particularly when you think about injuries to running back, you know, receivers, almost you name the position, and there have been difficulties in getting people to play, being able to play all through this team. And to be 5-0, I'm just amazed and shocked at this because this is the NFL. Your thoughts on just how good can this team actually be? Can it even be better than it was last year?
Yeah, you know, Paul, it's interesting. We always talk about stacking wins, right? Meaning that, hey, you're going to lose a game here or there. You know, you're not going to have every game go your way. And I think it's interesting that every year since Andy Reid has come to Kansas City, he's had a five-game winning streak somewhere in the season, and at least one five-game winning streak. But when you're undefeated, and look, we've been through this a number of times, at least in my career, where it gets exponentially tougher every week. The pressure of being undefeated itself starts to fight you. Not only are you getting, as you mentioned, everybody's best shots, but the pressure of everybody talking about the Chiefs are still undefeated. Will they remain undefeated? It becomes really tough to deal with. And you get up to 7, 8, and 9. It's immense pressure. And very few teams can handle it. You know, there's really only been a few in the history of the game that have made it bigger than that. I know that's premature as we sit at 5-0 to talk about that. But I think what's amazing is if you had asked me in the preseason, what do you want to see in the month of September? I would have said, well, I really would like to go 3-1, might go 2-2, and then we're going to have to turn it on in October. I don't know what to think now. We're sitting here undefeated.
And you'd have been asked that question before you knew Hollywood Brown and Rashi Rice.
Yeah.
And Isaiah
Pacheco. Gosh, yes. Good point.
We're all hurt. That's the part. I don't even care what their record is now. As much, I mean, I do, but I think we're seeing enough things, and it's like this reunion team, right? We have all these familiar faces on this team, which was funny that Colin Saunders had his big play on the other side as we're talking about a reunion of things. But Juju, Travis Kelce to me was outstanding last night. Juju had this yardage explosion. He was running wide and free. But at least, even if he has lost something from what he was 2 years ago, and certainly something from what he was when he was a very young player, he showed you last night that when it's dictated, he can get the job done. And clearly it was dictated last night by how wide open he was. That makes you feel a little better about the Rashi Rice injury, doesn't it?
Absolutely. You know, I think we always talk about how Father Time is unbeaten. But I think one of the things we undervalue is that with experience comes the ability to really, when a game needs you, when you've got to make the difference in a game, you can do it. And I think that's something that most rookies struggle with. Most veterans who were at one time good players still have that in them. We saw that last year in the playoffs, right, where everybody just turned it up a notch and how valuable experience was. But, yeah, Juju looked great last night. I mean, and you're right, Kelce – really had a good night as well. I thought it was funny in Mahomes' press conference. He said he was asked about the lateral by Travis Kelce. And he said, you know, I told him, just get in field goal range. And he does that. He's just like talking to my daughter, Sterling.
That's funny. And you know, one of the things, Dan, that Jacob and I were talking about earlier is the offensive line and the quality of protection. It was pretty good. Lot of the night, it was excellent protection, and there was a couple of plays where it was such good protection that Patrick Mahomes was moving around in the pocket when he didn't need to move around into the pocket. And I started thinking to myself, you know, this is a young man who is at his most comfortable moving around in a pocket. And we brought up the old name of Johnny Unitas. I think you're old enough to remember who Johnny Unitas
is. Yes, sir.
Did he ever move anywhere in the pocket? He stuck right where he was right there. Now you come get me. Here's where I'm at, right here. I'm not moving. Come get me if you want to get me. But, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, you know, this is football today. This is some of the great football today. Patrick Mahomes moves around in the pocket as well as, and I'm going to make this statement. You can chide me if I'm wrong. I think Patrick Mahomes moves around in the pocket as well as any modern quarterback has done in the last couple of decades when that was the end thing to do. Your thoughts on Patrick Mahomes and his ability to create, his ability to move, his ability to do things to, you know, to keep from getting sacked. Your thoughts on that, particularly with last night?
Well, you remember, Paul, we used to say, he's got happy feet. He's got happy feet.
Happy feet. You know? That's right. Very good. That's great.
Happy feet anymore because he can throw from anywhere. But you're absolutely right. And I do think that he is trying to work on his patience. I'm just not sure it's part of his demeanor, you know. But I do love that one of the things I love about Patrick Mahomes is he keeps his eyes up and looking downfield. And that's just so important. And when you can throw without having that kind of traditional Johnny Unitas plant, step, and throw, moving around in the pocket becomes one of those things. Okay, maybe he's doing it so he can have more a clear vision of what's downfield or not. I don't know, but you're right. He bounces out of there sometimes when you wish he wouldn't. And you brought up the offensive line. Man, I don't think we can underchime their bill enough. Yesterday they were commanding in almost every play. I was fascinated. It's been several years since they had a 300-yard passer, 100-yard rusher, and 100-yard receiver. And they did it yesterday with Mahomes, Kareem Hunt, and Juju Smith-Schuster. And you got to credit the offensive line, right? You don't have that without an offensive line that's in charge. And so those guys did a great job. I really was duly impressed with that.
So I asked Tommy this yesterday ahead of the game. I said, look, if we had to put on paper, like what do we think outside of Mahomes? Like, what's the strength of the Chiefs offense? It's the interior line. I mean, it is. It's the center in those two guards. Yeah. And when that happens, you run the ball. And they did. They ran it 32 carries by the backs. I was glad to see them try to boost Carson Steele's confidence because I think he's going to be a factor in some way down the stretch here. But that's it, right? Like, this all starts with the run. I know it looked good throwing the ball yesterday, but it's about running the ball still for this team because of the defense and because that middle of the offensive line is as good as there is in football.
Yeah, I was impressed with the number of first downs they had rushing the football. And honestly, I don't know what to think about Kareem Hunt. I mean, he almost looked like he never left and was back to that kind of starting running back form. I mean, he was running tough and right over the middle, and he was finding holes where there were barely any, and that's something special that we saw in him in 2017, 2018, and so I was just in the Chiefs' willingness, because look, you know, it's almost like they got back together with their ex-wife there, you know, I mean, they let him go, and then their willingness to put the game plan in his hands was very impressive. I agree with you on Carson Steele. Absolutely. And I think that, you know, that they've shown they can handle kind of developing that rookie, developing the player along a path that isn't too much, that doesn't break the player, but builds the player. And so I'm trusting that's what they're doing with Carson Steele, because I thought what we saw out of him early in this season was great. And, you know, I don't want him to be penalized forever for that fumble. But I think that right now, with the way Kareem Hunt, what are we going to do when Isaiah Pacheco comes back? Oh. I mean, obviously he's a quarterback, but look at the depth you're going to have in that room. It's amazing.
Right, right, right. You know, one of the things that I don't know the answer to, because I'm not sure I ever saw anything or heard anything with regards to a moment on the sideline when there was a little kerfuffle. Am I saying that right?
Kerfuffle.
I'm trying to be educated here, but there was a little bit of a problem on the sidelines, and it looked like that amongst the defensive players, something was going on. There was some yelling. There was some shouting. I mean, I'm glad a fist fight didn't break out because it looked like something serious. I never did figure out, nor have I heard, what that was all about. Do you have any insight as to what that was all about? Or was that just football players who are passionate being passionate?
That's it. I didn't ask Chris Jones, but I can guarantee something went wrong on one play, and then it happened again. And Chris Jones is the leader of that group, and he's a fiery individual. So, you know, he'll get his point across. It's one of those things. Remember when our kids were young, we told them, don't listen to how the coach is saying it. Listen to what he's saying, not how he's saying it. And I think it's a little with Chris Jones. It comes across very strong. And sometimes that doesn't always sit well with everybody. And so voices get loud. But I think you nailed it. It's just players, their competitive spirit is so ramped up there that it spills over onto the bench sometime. They want to be perfect. And look, you saw late in the game, Derek Carr is lucky he got out of the game because Chris Jones was just going to keep coming. And I had a lot of
offensive line injuries, right? Jones was feasting there.
No, and the worse it got, you know, you're dropping guys every week, including this one. And I felt sorry for the Saints because I was talking to the play-by-play guy for the Saints, and he said, you know, it wasn't a stellar line to begin with, and now we've got backups and back, and that's just a recipe for disaster when you talk about our defensive line, but I think that's what it was. I just think they were just fired up.
So on the other side of the ball, Dan Israel, Chiefs Radio Network executive producer, joining us right now on Sports Daily, our Chiefs insider. Always appreciate the visits. The defense was great again too, and as good as the offense, I think we just expect it now, but only allowing 220 yards. They were great against the run. They were great against the pass. Chris Olave, who's a star in this league, shut down by Trent McDuffie, shouldn't surprise anybody. I don't think, you know, you can't say enough about it. And we bring it up all the time. I thought Mitch Holthus was crazy before the season when he told us he thought this defense could be even better.
Yeah.
I think it might be now. Like, are we far enough in to say that it's at least as good as it was a year ago?
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, I really thought kind of the beginning of the season, I almost thought, Jacob, that the loss of Willie Gay Jr. was more substantial and interesting to see him last night. And unfortunately, he couldn't play. But the defense was unbelievable. And to hold Alvin Kamara to six carries for like 40 yards, I really thought that's what the Saints were going to do, is just come in and try to run the football down our throat. Because what else can they do? I mean, you know, you got this beat up offensive line. You're not going to back Derek Carr up to a 5-7 step drop and ask him to hold the football for two and a half seconds. Not with that line. So I thought Kamara, they're going to feature Kamara because Kamara's a dangerous, explosive runner still. And he's done, he's won them games this year. And so I expected to see just fistfuls of him, and the defense shut him down. Nick Bolton, man, he's becoming a beast. It's crazy. And you look at both sides of the cornerback situation, McDuffie and even Brian Cook got into the game. You know, I felt like the defense, we always knew the defensive line was strong, but we questioned the linebacking and the secondary. Can they maintain what they had from last year? The answer seems to be absolutely. And you're right. I think they got potential to be better than they were last year.
Well, you've got
to go to the bat. Go ahead, Paul.
No, I was just going to say, you've got to, in the games coming up, is there one particular game, let's say in the next 5 to 8 games, is there one game that you see as a problem? What is the one game that you look at that you think to yourself, you know, that's a game that the Chiefs are going to be fortunate to get out of with a win? What's that one team that bothers you, scares you the worst with regards to being able to beat the Chiefs?
Well, we don't play too well on Christmas Day. Well, I don't think that's really it. I think the way the Chiefs, and I mean this with sincerity, Paul, I'm not just homering here. I think if they play what they're capable to, no team really scares me. You know, I do think that, you know, going out to the 49ers is the next game, and that's a good football team, and you can't win them all. I mean, it just, your odds, I'd love to do that. I would love to upset the 72 Dolphins. I really yes. would, but you just can't do it. It's so difficult. And with their goal being to, you know, three-peat here, they want to get into the postseason in a good situation. So, it's a great question. Coach is always kind of hammered into us, and it took me, man, it took me probably 10 years of his 12 to really get used to this. Just look at it one game at a time, and so that's kind of what I'm trying to do is I'm looking at the 49ers right now and saying, how are they going to beat the 49ers?
One more, the bad news of yesterday, Rashi Rice is out for the year. So now as we go into a bye week, this is sort of the week for Brett Veach to really drill in. But after what we saw last night, not just from Juju, but, you know, the game plan in general, do you think the Chiefs bring anybody else into the wide receiver room?
I think, yes. As we discussed last week, I think Veach is probably working the phones pretty furiously. I know some fans really want Davante Adams. I just can't imagine in my wildest dreams that's going to happen.
You can't afford him anyway.
No, you're absolutely right. And I'm not sure he'd be worth it, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think they should. And just from a depth standpoint, you know, not that Juju and Worthy can't handle it. And but I guess I'm giving up on Sky Moore completely. I don't think he's going to ever make it back into the offensive packages for whatever reason. And so they need to get somebody in there because, as you mentioned, the Rice injury, you know, rest of the season, we're not going to see him back. I am encouraged the fact that – so if fans don't know, they don't believe that it was a full tear, but the scoping it out and what he's going to have done still is a several-month recovery, which is going to put him past the postseason. And so the good news is a complete tear would be a full calendar year, which would mean you wouldn't get him back till October or September of next year. And then he's got to serve his suspension. So he could have been out quite a bit of the 2026 season or the 2025 season if things had been worse. So it is good news in a way, even though we're not going to see him the rest of the year. I'm happy for that. But I think they've got to go out and get somebody, even if it's not maybe a first, you know, tier name, an A-list name. They got to get somebody that can serve as that utility and can kind of fill in some of that role, because you can't risk an injury to Worthy or Juju Smith-Schuster. And, you know, we saw Mecole Hardman out there last night in a little bit more than what we've seen. Didn't seem to be terribly effective, but maybe that's just the fact that he hasn't gotten the snaps that, you know, sometimes you just got to get into the, you know, the role of the game. And, you know, he hasn't really had that. He hasn't been afforded that. So we'll see. But I think to your question, Jacob, yeah, they need to go out and get somebody.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jacob.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say my last question, Dan, is an interesting question, I think, and that is that I was so worried about going into this game. There was a couple of things. Now, this is a good football team, or at least we thought it was a good team. At least earlier in the season, this was a good football team. And I was really worried. But there was one thing that was bothering me about this team and their ability to win this game, and this was Taylor Swift being in attendance on this particular game. She hasn't been around for a while. And you know, Dan, I was really concerned that there could be some problems with this team with Taylor Swift in attendance again. What's going on with Taylor? How's she doing?
Apparently the rumors of their relationship demise were exaggerated. I thought, actually, I was more excited. I saw Dennis Quaid yesterday.
All right.
I was like, that's more my style, you know. But I said he must be researching some kind of football rule or something. I don't know why he was there. But, it was nice to see that, you know, it kind of everything calmed down. And I hate too much when that becomes the storyline, right?
Yeah. Hey, yeah, Dad, eight love grand.
You said it, man.
All right. Dan, we appreciate it. Enjoy the bye week. We'll be back next week, and we will have a game to preview. It kind of times out well for a Tuesday visit to get it post-Monday Night Football headed right into the bye week.
Sounds good. We'll do it.
Thanks,
You'll
Dan.
You'll hear the Chiefs.
You bet.
And Dan Israel and the call. Each and every game over on the Chiefs Radio Network, KNSS. Happy to have him. Happy to have our Chiefs insider. All right, we can come back. We can react to some of that. We can open the phones back up the rest of the way at 869-1240. Appreciate you being here with us on this Tuesday. Great time to be alive if you're a fan of teams around this area. What a Monday night it was. We'll come back. More Sports Daily right after that.
And 1240 KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on KFH, celebrating a Chiefs Monday Night Football win, an impressive performance, a Royals win in Game 2 of the American League Divisional Series. You had the Tigers, even that's the other ALDS up. Paul, I don't know what to do here. I'm going to have to figure something out, because you know the old saying, when you're on a heater, you don't walk away from the table.
Right.
I've been on a little bit of a betting heater here Sunday night.
Oh boy.
With the, you know, with the Cowboys win, hit a couple of bets for me last night. The Chiefs, it was all over that game. I was real close to some like lotto ticket type things. Been pretty good with baseball. I was on the Tigers and the Royals. I say that with the baseball in the NLCS, I really don't have as much of a feel for those games right now. The Padres are pretty big favorites tonight with King on the mound, the way he pitched his last time out. Mets are slight favorites at home. It's been a little trickier in the National League. These are good series though, aren't they? Like this baseball postseason has been really, really entertaining and competitive.
Yeah, everything's 1-1. I mean, that's where you're at right now. This is competitive. You don't know who's going to win. I mean, it really is. If I was to ask you right now, who do you got favored to win this thing? Would it be the would you say the Dodgers? No.
I don't know who I would say. I would guess.
Okay.
That it's the Phillies. I mean, We can look. We can look and see, because it's a good exercise. Let's just see. We'll go to BetMGM here just real quick.
Okay. That's
the first one I could pull up. And let's look at the baseball futures. And right now it calls of World Series winners. It has the Yankees as the favorite, then the Dodgers, the Phillies, the Padres, the Guardians, the Tigers, the Royals, the Mets. You can still get 10-1 on the Royals. I don't think I agree with that. I would probably say the Phillies. Paul, but I'm not sure you can make a clear-cut case of any one team over another. And I say that, you know, as it pertains to the Royals more than anything else, because if you're the Royals and you're sitting here, and again, we mentioned a little bit of this in the last hour. If you missed it, you can go back and listen on the Odyssey app to our interview with Mike Gillespie, our Royals insider. If I'd have told you, Paul, that the bullpen would be as great as it has been down the home stretch of the regular season and into the postseason, that was the thing we thought might hurt the Royals in the postseason, right? We knew that they had good starting pitching, and that was what was going to get them there. We know they have a good middle of the lineup, and Pasquantino's back. But I would tell you these two things, and that's that the middle of the lineup hasn't provided much at all yet, and the bullpen's been really good. Make a case, a convincing case. Anybody out there, make a case to me why any team is more equipped for postseason winning baseball than the Royals right now. I don't think there is one. You could say the Phillies, who have that great lineup, great frontline starting pitching. I could hear that case, but the Dodgers have a pitching problem. I get it with the Yankees, but I think the Yankees are in trouble in this series. Their big bats aren't hitting yet. They probably should be down 0-2. So, okay. Every team's got, you know, maybe you make a case for the Guardians. I know Clase gave up that big home run last night. That's not something he's really ever done, quite frankly. So maybe the Guardians are up there. I don't know that there's a team you're going to convince me definitively that on paper is just a whole lot better than really any of the others. I think they're all pretty even this year, just like the regular season played out.
Well, and I get what you're saying, and particularly when I like the way you brought up the Yankees, And you probably give them a little bit more credit than I would have given them with regards to slumping, because I think when you have the big bats like they have that have literally almost gone quiet, they're very beatable. I don't see them at this point playing the way they are, which can be changed tonight, by the way. Or I guess
sure, they can wake up at any point. They've got better pitching than they get credit for, Paul. Well, Schmidt's good. If Schmidt's your number three, you're looking pretty good. Like the Yankees are good. And if it's ever possible, this feels like the year people have sort of slept on the Yankees. I think they have anyway. You got Cole, you got Rodon, who wasn't bad last night. And Schmidt's been good all year. I mean, they're equipped for this thing too. I just don't think they're any more equipped than the Royals. I'll put it that way.
Well,
I think the Yankees are a really good team, but on paper, I don't know that they're any more equipped than the Royals are. I guess maybe the bottom of their lineup is better, but the bottom of the Royals lineup is hidden right now, Paul. They're putting pressure on teams.
Right. And of course, I think everybody, if you're a baseball fan, you're tickled pink to see, you know, all the series that 1-1. This is competitive. Everybody's playing. There's really, I'm trying to think of some scores here in the past week or so, but there's been no blowouts. These are very, very competitive games. And really and truly, I think right now you're kind of correct. There's about four teams that you could pick. If you really wanted to place a bet, and that's kind of what we're talking about, there are four teams that you could take that would win, could win the World Series. And so I think that makes for really good, fun, play in terms of trying to get to the World Series. So, gosh, this is just going to be a lot of fun. And, the Royals are really playing well. You know, if you remember correctly, I was a little concerned in the last, 3 weeks of the season, the Royals weren't playing well. They were not doing the things they needed to do. They had some losing streaks. And I was always concerned going into the playoffs that this would be something that could carry on. Well, it hasn't. It hadn't carried on at all. It's been pretty pleasant to see, and particularly you beat the Braves.
I mean, they didn't score a lot of runs in the Orioles series. They just had enough to get it done. That's what would feel a little daunting to me. Right. You know, if I was the opposition, is the bullpen has been so good for Kansas City,
right?
And you know, it's probably a full season's worth of work where I still don't totally trust it, but I'm good running it out there right now. Mm-hmm. It's a great time to be a baseball fan.
Yeah,
this is a wild year. There is not a dominant team in this sport this year.
Yeah, and it's been fun to see the Royals starting, and I'm going to say starting with maybe the Braves at the end of the year and then move into the playoffs and that kind of thing. You know, why not the Royals, though, Jacob?
They are equipped to make a run. They got three games left with the Yankees to decide it. You know what my favorite thing about yesterday was? Just to talk about how wild this season has been for the Royals. The fact that you had 76 combined years of age on Tommy Pham and Yuri Gurriel, you know, combining to score a run in that game, you know, knocking the other in. 76 years of combined age. We think about this whole season, and the Royals had to go find Pham and Yuri Gurriel, a 36 and a 40-year-old, and they're basically starting every game of the postseason. And they're productive. Gurriel has been incredible in this series. I don't even remember before the Royals added him the last time I thought of his name. And those guys are key contributors in a team that's tied 1-1 right now in the American League Division Series.
Yeah, it's something
it's
else
just,
to see.
In a wild 76 years, Paul. That's almost as old as you.
That's all. It's getting up there, isn't it? No, they've got me by a little bit, but not a lot.
All right. Royals fans, you can chime in. Just so I'm having so much fun with the Royals, and I hope everybody else is too. All right. When we return, Jad's got some cut-ups of the game last night. We'll continue our celebration with some of our favorite calls from the game last night. Mitch Holt is over on the Chiefs Radio Network as we make our way down the home stretch here at Sports Daily.
And 1240 KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily here. All right, so there was a play everyone was talking about. It was another lateral play, this time not called offside. Let's take you to the call of Mitch Holthus, and then we'll get the reaction to it.
Third and 22 at the 44-yard line of the Saints, leading 10-7. Again, a four-man rush. Quick pass. Kelce at the 40. Coming all the way across the field. Flips it off. It goes to Perine. He's at the 25. He is close to a first down. Kelce, who messes around in practice doing this a lot. He thought he had a touchdown last year. Remember, on a play, he's got 21 yards. The Chiefs have fourth down and one. Kelce came right to left all the way across the field and almost was tackled, and then he shovels it underneath to Samaje Perine on an old hook and ladder.
Love to see it.
It's a part of the game plan. And then there was a great debate, and I loved it. I thought Troy Aikman and Joe Buck did a great job with it, as they're debating on whether it was planned or not. Let's get the reaction to it, and then we can talk about it. So what you'll hear here, you've got Samaje Perine talking about the lateral. You've got Patrick Mahomes talking about the lateral, and you've got Andy Reid talking about the lateral play on that.
Like, he's playing backyard football, and experience it firsthand. It was crazy, but it's fun. Seeing him do the exact same thing in practice, so he just stay in phase and be ready for anything. And I've seen him do it in a game, so I didn't put it past him. Just stay ready.
I'm shaking my head because I told him before the play, I said, I'm going to throw it to you so we can get in field goal range. And he's underhand shoveled it across the entire field. So, I mean, it's like I'm talking to, like, Sterling. So, that's Travis, man. He's a special player, and as long as he does it and it works, man, no one's going to say anything.
He does a great job, you know, with the decision to do that or not do it. If he doesn't do well with it, I tell him don't come back to the bench. So, you know, I always tell those guys, keep running, because Pat, when he starts moving around, you got to stay on the run. And he got caught kind of pulling up thinking the play was over. And, you know, Pat's pretty amazing with that ball. So, yeah, good lesson to learn. But then he came back and did a nice job on that play.
Yeah, it clearly wasn't called on the play. And no. I think that was a little confusing because Lee Salters asked him at halftime and he said, we practice it every day. So then they were like, okay, well, it was designed. Paul, that wasn't designed.
No, it wasn't.
The design is that his teammates are learning, be ready, which is pretty crazy if you think about it, because early in his career, Kelce would have tried to run six dudes over in that, but he's told us and he's shown, like, he understands he's got to preserve his body. And so he's always got his eyes up. If you watch him in the middle of the field, to me, it looks like he's looking for that play all the time. And Perine was in perfect position, and I think you have the trust to do it. And that's funny. Andy Reid says, if it doesn't work, don't come back to the bench, right? It's one of those old things. But Andy Reid invites this creativity.
Sure he does.
He does.
Right.
And you've got players that you trust to get it executed. It was the perfect time for it. They converted that fourth down. Now, it didn't matter, but they converted the fourth down. I think it's a part of what makes him great, right? I say this all the time about Travis Kelce. He sees the field like a quarterback sees the field. He reads a defense like the quarterback reads the defense. I think we've learned that more with his podcast. If you listen to him sort of describe the game, right, and get through it. But man, when you see it happen, it's wild to think about other players reading defense. He knew where the other defenders were. We've listened to him walk through these plays before. Like, he's got an idea as soon as he catches the ball that he may have somebody over there running free because of the way the play was designed.
Well, it's the way defensive players react. They're going to go to where the ball is. Now the comment was made by someone that this is a hook and ladder. It wasn't a hook and ladder. This was a lateral to,
right.
Because a hook and ladder is basically
a called play.
Let me just walk through this real quick, because maybe people don't know, but the first receiver that receives the football, that's the hook. He runs a little hook route. He runs about 8-10 yards, hooks up. The ball comes to him right at the end of the hook. And then the ladder is a person trailing the hook and climbing the field on a ladder, climbing the field, and the ball is, that's where you get the term hook and ladder. That was not a called play. This was a situation where, by the way, you're Andy Reid. You got a future Hall of Fame quarterback. You got a future Hall of Fame tight end. Do you not trust them to do what they think is best and have a little fun? And let me tell you this. I'm sure. I'm not at their training camp. You're not at their practices. We're not there. I'm telling you right now, those guys have fun screwing around with this. I can just tell you that. They're having a ball. They feel like they can create, that they have a coaching staff that believes in them. There are a lot of pluses to this ability for the Chiefs to do this. There's a lot of pluses amongst the players on that team and amongst the amongst the coaching staff. So it's a good thing, and it's fun to see. But, you know, I fully trust these guys. These are our future Hall of Famers that are pulling this stuff off. And you know who else really appreciates this? The players that are involved in it. Not just the quarterback, end, the other players. They like it.
I think it's a great point. And I think that a part of what makes this Chiefs team at its core, the ones that have been able to stay together, right? A part of what makes them great is they just don't ever get rattled by anything. Last year was the closest we had seen. And that's why I think it was so strange to us, right? Like they appeared to be rattled for the first time that I can remember at this generation of the Chiefs. Other teams get rattled all the time. The Jets just fired their coach after week 5, right? Like we see teams get rattled. But the Chiefs never do. And I think a part of the reason for that is they do, even in this professional world, find ways to make it fun. And I've always appreciated that about Andy Reid, is that he has let the personalities of Patrick Mahomes, of Travis Kelce, of Chris Jones, to just become the identity of the team. And yes, all three of those players are Hall of Famers, all three of them. But they're all three also some of the bigger characters and I guess you could call it joyous football players, like people that just love it so much and it does bleed out. And I think that's a part of the reason, Paul, you can lose Isaiah Pacheco and Rashee Rice and Hollywood Brown, all these players to injury and still be able to be relaxed and calm and just sort of get out there and trust it. Or if something doesn't work, they're just like, all right, we'll get right back to it. You know, there's a lot of that in there, but I think that type of play is a really nice manifestation of a part of the behind-the-scenes stuff, the identity, the DNA of a team that you don't always see, and that's, of course, been a part of what has made the Chiefs so great for the last 7-8 years.
Remember, football and baseball and even basketball, they're all what? They're all children's games. Men Correct. Playing children's games. That's the point of this. Having fun. That's why you do it. Why do you play high school football? You play it to have some fun. By the way, Hook and Ladder. Saw one last Friday night. Topeka Highland Park, we're playing them. They run a hook and ladder, gained 10 yards. Ran it, caught it, caught the hook, got the lateral over. The ladder ran for about another 5-6 yards, tackled. But it was fun to see a team creative and doing that kind of thing. It's really kind of a cool thing. And it's a play that's been around, gosh, I think since the 1930s. To be real truthful, that's been around a long time, the hook and ladder. Anyway, I gave a little explanation as to what it was, how it sets up, what it really means. I imagine some people weren't quite sure what it was, but it's fun to see. And it's fun to see big, grown, professional adults making hundreds of million dollars having fun with it. It's fun
having
to see.
Having that much fun with it. Yeah, everything went well for the Chiefs last night. Is that going to be the case in every game that they play in the NFL season? Of course it's not, but it never is in the NFL.
Well, that's
it
true.
It never
no,
goes
true.
That well. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't. You ask Dan, like, of the next, after the bye, like, what scares you? They got to go to San Francisco. They got a game against Tampa. They got a game in Buffalo. They got games against the Chargers, against the Texans, against the Steelers. Like, it's really, really nice that they're 5-0 despite these injuries, but they do have to just stop. They come out of the bye and go back-to-back road games. One of those, the second half of that, is a divisional game. Like, it is not going to be easy at any point, I don't think, for the Chiefs. As easy as it looked last night, and it did. They dominated the Saints last night. It ain't going to be easy. It ain't going to be easy, you know, to lock up the top seed in the AFC. So, yeah, we'll party and celebrate it here today because it was a fun game to watch and you had the things like the lateral and everything was working well. And it's not going to always be that easy, as we learned in some of the other weeks. But at the end of the day, Paul, Chiefs are 5-0.
That's right. Let's not forget Taylor Swift was there. She did her thing. I mean,
I know. Listen, you know, and she was sitting next to Brittany Paul. I know you've been worried about that friendship.
I told you that a couple weeks ago. I've been worried about the fact that they, I think they're on the outs. I think they're having a girl fight. I don't know what it was. I was concerned.
I think more than anything else, Paul, you know what?
What?
They're probably just as ready as the rest of us for this election to be over. That's probably what they're.
You know,
that's probably what that man.
That might like, be. Who that might
just get. We got less than a month, and we don't have to worry about this anymore.
I think you may be right there. I think
let's
you
all get together and watch some football.
Yeah.
How about that?
I think that's good.
Yeah, no, it was good to see them up. I had my kids, so I have my what, you know, my proudest moment of engineering. My two TVs hung next to each other, and I had my kids down there with me last night.
Can I ask a question? What is the response of your daughters? You got young daughters.
They love it. They're trying to learn football and the intricacies of it, but they are more caught up in the celebrity or the pop culture aspect of it right now.
Okay.
So my oldest daughter, who is a heck of a football player and probably should be playing flag football, we're going to work on that because she's got a cannon.
Going to be Olympic sport probably too, by the way.
Yeah. So she's watching and she's like, okay, she had the Kelce brothers mixed up. She thought Travis was Jason and Jason was Travis. So she got that figured out.
Okay. Easy to do.
She knew Taylor Swift was going to be up there. She saw her, that got her excited. But you know what the best part of it is?
This is why
I love the Taylor Swift effect.
What?
She was asking me questions about, was that a good play? What is that? You know, what does that second and four mean? Like, as she's watching and having fun with that, and she likes football, but she doesn't understand it quite yet. She's asking me all those questions.
Oh,
that's why I love that Taylor Swift is there.
How much?
You know, we're bringing a lot of people are becoming football fans, right? Not, you know, you can have fun with the pop culture of it, but you kind of see the game and you're like, this is fun. This is why all those men are idiots. And, you know, we'll just drool over this silly kids game. It is kind of fun to watch.
Yeah.
But that was cool. It was a great night. Glad for, you know, the fans around here that it was a night to celebrate on both ends. We're going to come back. We'll tell you what's on the network tonight when we return on Sports Daily.